So what happens when you combine my insane curiosity with some of the world's most interesting people? You end up with incredible conversations full of stories, insights, and the defining moment that made them who they are today. This is the David Spisak Show. Welcome to the David Spisak Show. As always, I'm so delighted and thankful that you're here. I really appreciate you investing your time with me. And I'm here with the one and only Brad Mugg. I had the opportunity to actually spend a little time with Brad and interview him a number of months ago. But, you know, Brad is an innovator. He's one of those guys that's always looking to reinvent as things change around him, in the ecosystem that he's in and the landscape of retail automotive. Everything from obviously maybe new models, new marketing, new campaigns, interest rates, and God knows whatever else is shifting, EVs and everything else that's shifting beneath our feet. One of the things I always admire about Brad is the fact that he's always up to something new. And when he is, things are about to get better. So I'm very pleased to introduce you or reintroduce you to Brad Mugg. Brad, thank you for taking the time to join me.
David, thanks for having me back on your show. I'm so excited for today. And I just thank you for, we've been together, for 6 years now. And I've got to know a lot about you and learn a lot from you. So I thank you.
You're welcome.
But I tell you, rather than the show going the way it usually goes, David, I kind of like to change it up a little bit. You always like to bring light on other people and have them on your show and really, hear about them. And I'd like to change that up and,
good.
6 years of knowing you, we have spent quite a bit of time together over the BBC events we've gone through for the last few years, and it's been absolutely spectacular. Again, I know a little bit about you, but you're such a humble guy to where every time I see you or run into you, I hear another story about you that I never knew. And you have a lot of success stories, your personal life and in your business life. And I know you have a very great Toyota success in your past. I know you have a very successful reverse risk, which I know had several different names you've sold off over the years. I go to NADA and I see you on the Tekion floor. So I know you've got something going on there and I have no idea what you have going on there, but I know it's something. So instead of me today, I'd like, if you're okay with this, I want to hear more about you instead of me. What do you think about that?
I think that's, wow. Like I said, wow, that's interesting and unfamiliar and a little uncomfortable because, and you could relate to this. It's interesting talking about other people and learning about other people. I'm not nearly as comfortable on the other side of things. And that's why I'm not prone, to get into these situations. I'm very rarely being interviewed by somebody else. So anyways, but you could ask me anything you want other than what I don't want to answer.
So you're going to take this on then. Never done this side of it either,
Okay. So listen, this will be very interesting.
Yeah.
Because I've never seen that side of you either. And so I don't know, if this is going to be very Ellen DeGeneres, very nice and easy and Kelly Clarkson or somebody like these. There's got to be these shows where it's very soft or is this a very, what was his name? Larry King or... somebody who's getting in your face on Fox News or something.
Right.
I don't know if it's going to be hard hitting or somewhere on the other end. I'm going to do my very best. I will be absolutely spectacularly honest.
Good.
Hit me.
Okay, good. I'm so glad we're going to do this. This will be fun. And again, there'll be some bumps and bruises for sure, but we're going to get through it. I want to hear about your personal life as far as where you grew up. I know you live in Lake Oswego. I believe you still live there, right?
I do.
But what took you from where you started and where you're at? I'd love to hear that.
Thank you. It's very interesting for any of us that, right? If you think about if you think about how did I get here and pull out a blank piece of paper and draw a dot on the far left where you started and a dot for each place along the way, there's no way somebody could have predicted our paths in most cases. And that certainly is the case with me. I was born in San Francisco. My mother is of Mexican descent. My father, of Polish descent. So I always would jokingly call myself Polexican when somebody would ask my ethnicity. Nobody could ever guess my ethnicity. They always guessed I was Middle Eastern, I was Greek, I was Italian, yeah. I was anything but Mexican or certainly Eastern European. But I grew up in San Francisco for the first 5 years of my life in the very Hispanic area called the Mission. My father, being a gringo, was very uncomfortable living in that area. Unfortunately, I really wished we would have stayed there, but he wasn't having it. So he moved us to San Mateo in the suburbs of San Francisco. It's about 25, 30 minutes south. I grew up there, stayed there, had a rather interesting and not favorable childhood. I'll leave it at that. And I stayed in San Mateo through graduating high school. And then I was kind of, you know, because of the childhood and my dad walking out on us, which was honestly the best thing, literally the nicest, kindest thing he ever did. But I started to act out, you know, I started to really get into partying and, you know, not doing what I really should be doing. And I just felt myself going down a very dangerous path, though. So one day I was literally driving in my car and I made a decision, made a U-turn, and I drove across the San Mateo Bridge to where the enlistment center was for the military. I walked in the door and said, I want to sign up. And just like that, I entered the military. I took the same test they give to everybody, aptitude test, so they could figure out where to put you, what you're predisposed to do. And for whatever the reason, couldn't tell you, but I scored very high in the highest end. And in the Navy, if you score in the top 5% of the population that takes the test, they give you a nuclear power test. Well, even more strange, I passed that with flying colors. So next thing you know, I'm not only going in the Navy, but I'm going in the Navy in the nuclear power program. So I went through the Navy, I went into engineering school and then nuclear power school. When I figured out I was going to be on a Trident submarine underwater for 2 months at a time, that didn't sound like me. So I begged my way out of that and was able to get transferred. Ended up, of all things, Brad, on a naval ship in Alameda Naval Air Station, which is literally 35 minutes from where my mom was, where I was living at the time as a kid. So I served in the service. I got out. And when you get out of the service, they give you a little bit of time to go find a job, get off their payroll. I was making a little over $700 a month. And back then we had the newspaper, you know, there was no internet. So we had the newspaper and I'm coming through classifieds. And the one thing I knew I could do is I could sell because I had done some selling during my high school days. And I liked it. I was comfortable. So there was an ad that was in the auto business related, but not a dealership. It was for a company that helped dealerships start F&I departments, and they sold service contracts, credit life, disability, all that stuff.
Sure.
All I saw in the ad, though, was company car. I don't have a car. Check. That sounds good. T&E account. Don't know what that is, but it sounds pretty good. I'd like to travel and have somebody pay the expenses. And income to 45 grand a year. Well, I'm making 9 grand a year. So I'm like, okay, that sounds like all the money in the world. So I took a yellow cab down about 40-minute drive, went to the interview, and Brad, I freaking nailed the interview. This guy's name is Harry McCandless, and I nailed the interview so much that at the end of the interview, he opens his desk drawer, he hands me the keys to a brand new Buick Regal, right? Baby blue, tonneau. This was 1981. Okay. So 1981, Buick Regal. It had the crushed blue velour interior. I mean, it was a cool car. So my initial job in the car business was just going from dealer in my area. You'll appreciate this. My area, people not from California, maybe this won't have relativity, but I want you to just look at the miles that I'm about to describe and put that where you are. You're probably going to pass through three states. So I would, my area went from Bakersfield all the way up to Reno. Now here's the kicker. I had to hit every store from end to end every single week, every week. So at that time, when I first started, we probably only had about maybe 8 or 10 stores, you know, from Reno to the Sacramento area, Yuba City, all the way down to the Valley and all the way down to, what is that? What's north of Bakersfield? Can't remember. Anyways, these are small, a lot of rural towns along the way. So I was doing that for about 6 months. I did really well. And one of the dealerships that I helped install an F&I department in poached me, asked me if I wanted to go to work. So I go to work as a salesperson. 6 months later, I'm his finance manager, right? Literally. I go from salesperson, did really well, finance manager, sales manager, ended up. And then what happened was crazy is that after I did that, I got poached by a Ford store. I went over to this Ford store. This was a 100-plus-year-old Ford store that this guy had bought. It was owned by the previous owner for 100 years. And I had to start from scratch. I'd never been a sales manager before. And only one salesperson stayed after the previous owner sold it. Everybody else ditched the place. So I had to start out by acquiring salespeople. I hired a company, by the way, that said they were professionals at finding car salespeople. And I'll never forget this. I went up at one point, and this person is showing the movie Used Cars. If you haven't watched the movie Used Cars, you cannot possibly appreciate how ridiculously inappropriate this is. But this was what he was using to introduce these prospective car salespeople to our business. So, but I did learn a really important lesson was that I ended up pitching that guy out of the store and I said, I'm going to do this myself. I put an ad in the paper for salespeople where you could earn 50 to 75 grand a year, you know, with paid vacation and health plan and 401k, all the stuff. And nobody answered the ad, Brad. Nobody. And then I couldn't figure out what it was. And then I thought, just for the heck of it, I'm going to change one thing. I changed the income range from 50 to 75 to 25 to 45. And the doors came down. You see, it turned out, and I learned a really important lesson about something called self-efficacy. If people don't believe they can make something happen, bring it about, they will not answer that ad. And that's all that was. But I, long story boring, I learned a lot in that organization. It was called Givekey Ford. I'm very thankful for the opportunity. And by the age of 25 now, I'm making about just under 150 grand a year. But I was restless because what I really wanted to do at that time was A, be an entrepreneur, B, go out and be a trainer and coach people on what I've learned, on how to perform at a higher level. So I went home to my then wife, ex-wife now, still friends, no hate mail. We're still friends to this day. And we had a baby at that time and we're pregnant with another one, my son. And I said, listen, I'm not expecting to fail, but this is something I really want to do. I need to do. But I just need to know if we lose everything. If we lost the house, the cars, everything, are we cool? And she said, yes. And I said, done. I went in the next day and resigned. Wow. And I went to work with Brian Tracy, who's a big, like one of the most noteworthy trainers. I mean, it was a great opportunity.
Yeah, great.
So I had the ability to get to learn his curriculum and then facilitate it. And then kind of combine that, Brad, with what I knew in auto. So I go to this guy at the Ford store in Sacramento, this dude I'd known for a long time. And I said, I got great news. I'm no longer with Givekey Ford. I'm on my own. And this is what I'm doing. His name was Dale McPherson. And I said, I'd really love to have you as my first client. And it's going to cost you $3,000 a day. But I mean, I was just audacious. And he said, David, he says, no, he just flat turned me down. He says, but I can help you. And I said, great. He says, I'm going to introduce you to a guy you really need to know. His name's John Palumbi. And I said, oh, great. Maybe he's another dealer. So John Palumbi, it turned out, was a very well-known trainer. I didn't know, but an auto trainer, been around for 20 years. And he takes me to lunch and tells me, you made a big mistake. You should go back to working at dealerships. Don't do this. It's terrible.
Well, No.
I'm not prone to quitting. So long story boring, after about another month of just dripping on Dale, he finally hired me as his first client. In the ensuing 2 years, by the way, I went from making 145 everybody to making literally $0, baby on the way. And I only had enough money in the bank to pay for 3 months' bills. So I flat had to get after it. So I did. Ultimately, I ended up doubling my income from what I was making when I left at 145. And one of the clients I had was a Mercedes store in San Jose, Smythe European. And I was working with them for about the most of the 2 years that I was self-employed. by this time, we had the second baby, my little boy at that time, not little anymore, 36, Trey. But so what happened was at this time, one of the things I learned when you're coaching or training is the more successful that you become, the more time you spend on the road. And that didn't work for me as being somebody who wanted to be with the family. So the Mercedes store kept dripping on me to come to work. And one day, back when, remember when we had pagers, I get a page. I get this buzz and I pick up my pager. I look at it and it says, it had their phone number, 408-983-5200. Then it said 911-911-911. So I called him up and Michael, the GM, son of the owner, great guy, said, I said, David, we've been talking about this for a while. I need you to come to work here. I need you here. And I said, okay. So I go in thinking I'm going to get this big payday. I'm going to be driving a Mercedes demo. This is going to be yep. Six shades of sweet.
You made it.
Yep. Right?
Yep.
So I go in. He does offer me one sweet demo for sure. Nice E-Class. But the starting pay at that time was $145,000. Now, I want people to understand the irony. I was making $145,000 2 years ago at 25 before I started this company. But now I'm making twice as much. So I went from 145 to zero, worked my way up to almost 300. Now I'm cutting myself back again to 145. And you have another decision in life to make. Do you take this or not? I took it. So within a couple of years, I'm up to 350. And then it keeps going up from there. Then I become GSM. I ultimately became the general manager, became the president of that company. And I go literally from making 143 to, in a relatively short amount of time, now I'm in my young 30s and I'm making north of $1 million, right? So,
okay, question. What at that Mercedes store, you came in as what? As a sales manager?
Sales manager, new car manager.
And how many years were you there?
We sold the store in 1999, January 99, to AutoNation. And then I stayed on as president and general manager through the year 2000.
Got it.
I stayed with AutoNation overseeing that area to 2008. So technically was part of that store for 17 years, but as far as directly involved, about 10.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. Cool.
And we grew at that time, as you know, from when I came in, we were averaging $1.2 million a year, $1.3 million a year for the previous 5 years. And then that 1993 started implementing some real changes, and the store went from 1.3 to 3.1 to 5.6 to 8.1 to 12.8 to 16.7 to 24.7, 3.9 acre lot. And by the way, the first year of that climb, it killed all advertising, no advertising other than used car liners. And then the last year was $29 million. And we were doubling, I mean, the number one store in profitability, we more than doubled. You know, we were 12 times the top 25%. We were nearly 30 times what the average store is making.
Is this in Northern California as well?
San Jose, California. Yeah.
Wow.
So just an incredible, that wasn't me. It was just an incredible 21, just unbelievably talented, dedicated, passionate managers who we all had the same belief, the same vision. We had this incredible culture and DNA that was created by William Smythe and carried on by Michael Smythe. And then we were all caretakers of that. You know, we achieved less than 3% employee turnover in that store in an industry that was at 89% at the time. We were number one in fixed gross. Great, unbelievable people, John Seeler and Brian Nelson, Bill Gordon. In that department, you know, we went from 30 techs to 107 techs. We were $2.4 million a month in fixed gross, number one in the country. I mean, this store was just killing it. By the way, just as a side note, and anybody that worked there at the time, don't hate me because I was one of them. But we, none of our people were the highest paid, even on our boulevard that we were on, even though we were doing extraordinary things. But nobody left because the culture was just incredible. The way people took care of each other, our client culture, our employee culture was just incredible. So, and you know, I love the fact and I admire the fact that you do the same thing. So anyways, one other thing I might've skipped over just for people. I told you in the spirit of transparency, I started in endeavoring to be a stand-up comedian, you know, when I was a teenager in San Francisco, and that was prior to comedy blowing up, because that was prior to Showtime and HBO and all that. It was hard work. I'd go to work, I'd go to school. As a senior, I got out early because I had already had all the credits I need. The school I went to was interesting. It employed a college approach where you needed X amount of credits to graduate. It wasn't necessarily just show up for 4 years. So I had the credits to graduate by mid-junior year. Actually, no, end of my junior year. So my senior year, I only had to take one class. And then I had a job selling. And then I went to another job selling, which was at Macy's. My daytime job was selling big office equipment with people way older than me. In San Francisco, I took the train up there. Then I took the train back, worked nights at Macy's, and then go up to San Francisco and try to break in as a comic at night. And so I did that until I went to the service. When I got out of the service, I started going back to comedy until I had my daughter, Elise. And then I figured out this was not the lifestyle for being a good dad. So I quit. And that's when I dedicated myself to auto. And I knew I really had to outwork and out-hustle people, because I just was not the most gifted or talented or smartest dude in the room.
That's not a good statement. Now, you already told me how you tested in the military. So good try.
Well, but keep going. Okay. I wasn't dumb as a box of rocks. Don't get me wrong, but I'm saying as it pertained to automotive, retail automotive. Okay. So anyways, now you fast forward from Smythe. We sell the store to AutoNation. And unfortunately, the gentleman that was running the Northwest region, Tim Pring, just a prince of a guy, contracted cancer. And so 3 months after we were acquired, Mike Maroney asked if I would step in for Tim so he could get stem cell treatments. And it was supposed to be, you know, kind of a temporary thing for 6 months. But we did so darn well in the first quarter, thankfully, that I was there. Again, it's always because of your people. It's always your people. It's never one person.
I agree. I agree.
And we just had a heck of a turnaround story. We were the lowest performing region in the United States for AutoNation, also the most recent or newest. We were the last region to be formed in Northern California up to the Canadian border. But we had terrible performance. We had very hard stores. You know, AutoNation had acquired a group of Chevy and Cadillac stores that were hemorrhaging money like you could not believe. $250 a month. You know, Cadillac was hemorrhaging $150, Chevy $250. We had a Nissan store that made no money. And so we had a mix of really good stores and some really challenging stores.
How many stores? How many stores were up there?
43.
Yeah, wow, a lot of stores.
So I ended up, Tim came back. This is a really good cautionary tale for people. You know, nothing that we do in our life, right? So one of the gentlemen that works for me, Franklin, him and his wife, Katie, just had their first baby. And I said, I can promise you, you will never achieve anything or have any title in your life that'll have greater meaning to you than being a father or being a dad. And being a father is biological. Being a dad is, you know, Brad, is the emotional part, right?
It is, yeah.
Anybody can be a father, but to be a great dad is a different deal. So, you know, this gentleman, Tim, was supposed to stay out for 6 months. I don't know if you know, when you get stem cell, they basically are nuking your body. And when you come out like an infant, you have no immune system. So you're not supposed to expose yourself to the public. You got to take really great care. Tim loved the business so much, and because of his particular situation, which I won't go into, he came back too early. He put himself on airplanes when he still didn't have an immune system. And I remember one day in my office when I was running the region, when he came back, he showed up in the office in Fremont. I said, Tim, go home, be with your wife, be with your kids. There's nothing more important than that. And I'll never forget what he said. He said, David, he said, I've lost my health. He said, I've lost a lot of money, because at that time, when you sold a store to AutoNation, it was stock, Brad.
Right.
And they sold the store at a $34 stock price, and it had crashed down to $4, $5.
Oh, geez.
So he said, I've lost most of the money, and don't take this away. This is all I have left. And what do you say to a guy?
It's like, yeah, it's tough.
You know, so he wanted to hang out. Unfortunately, he passed away about 4 months after that. And it was tough. And there's to this day, there's an award called the Tim Pring Award for the highest performing person who exemplifies, you know, Tim's passion and commitment and work ethic. So his legacy lives on, thankfully.
Yeah.
But what happened was I ended up going from being a car guy to a corporate guy. Never asked for that. And so the 8 years I spent at AutoNation were incredibly valuable. I didn't agree with everything we did. Far from it. We were a tremendously great company, high integrity, highest ethics. But, you know, I just didn't agree fundamentally with where we placed importance. To me, the people was always the most important.
Yeah.
And we had some fundamental disagreements, but Mike Jackson and Mike Maroney and Steve Moore were great mentors. They're great people at that time. And I learned a ton. It's like an MBA.
Yeah, sure it is. Very great. Thanks. Yeah.
Also at Smythe, I ended up with the weirdest thing, you know, kind of a total Forrest Gump deal. But it was 1992, 93, maybe. I get approached by one of the defensive linemen from the Niners. His name was Dwayne Board. Pee Wee was his nickname. You could guess why. It was gigantic. But he wanted to buy a Benz, helped him buy a Benz. He calls me up a week or so later and he says, "Hey, David, thanks again for your help." He says, "Could you possibly help a friend of mine here at the facility who really needs help getting out of his Mercedes? He wants to get into something else." I said, "Yeah. What's his name?" He said, "Dwight Clark." Well, anybody who's a 49er fan knows the name Dwight Clark. Like, Dwight Clark opened the door for our first Super Bowl with something called the Catch. Well, my competitor had stuffed him into an SL by saying, "Hey, if you do, you know, reads for us on the radio and you represent us, you know, be our ambassador, we will pay for your lease payment on your SL." So they sold him a lease and never paid the payments.
Oh. So
6 months later, he's got this SL he doesn't need. He's got two kids at home. Him and his wife, Ashley, have kids. He says, "David, I need a regular sedan or a wagon." I said, "Dwight, I need a signed jersey from you. I need a signed picture from you and Joe Montana. And I need a football. And give me a few weeks." I sold that car in 2 weeks' time. All I needed to find is a hardcore 49er fan.
Oh, that's true. I get what you did. I got you.
So I said, "And they need to meet you. The day they're going to pick up the car, I need you to be available."
Oh,
he said, "Done." The dude was brilliant. 25 grand upside down.
Brilliant.
I got him out.
Brilliant.
Got him out. I sold him not one, but two cars. He introduces me to the president of the 49ers, Carmen Policy. I helped him in his get his Mercedes. He introduces me to the owner, Eddie DeBartolo. I help him with his S600.
Wow.
Then next thing you know, it's Ronnie Lott and it's Jerry Rice and bam. But I also got asked as part of that, as a result of that. It's amazing. The law of indirect effort, everybody, you get more through indirect means than direct.
Don't be obvious.
Go for the non-obvious. So as a result of that, I got asked to become a member of their board, right? So that started a 12-year stint on the 49ers on their board of their nonprofit, their 501c3. And it was such an honor to be affiliated with them. And as part of what the work that I was doing with them, I went from having seats six rows from the top of Candlestick to being able to be on their charter, going to away games, being on the sidelines on away games and home games. And I knew everybody in that organization front to back. Again, here's a lesson. I never asked for one thing. Never asked one of them to sign anything. Never. Just treated them like regular people. And I think they really appreciated that. So
yeah, I'm sure.
that was a really,
that had to be an amazing,
really special experience for me. But fast forwarding, get done with AutoNation in 2000, end of 07, started me and my buddy Frank Sheets, who's also a Mercedes dealer. We started Reverse Risk. January of 08, thought it would be a great time, 2008, to start a new business.
I'm sure it was, right? Had no idea what was coming at you.
As the business is collapsing, as the industry is collapsing.
Really? Oh, yeah, but we'll never forget the time.
But you know, The universe is a funny thing. Timing's funny, you know, honestly. And I thought at that time, because the business was really starting to fade, you know, incomes were really starting to come down. And I thought, well, if you're ever going to jump off, this is the time. So you remember, guys, I went from 145 to zero. I went from 290 to 145. Now I was over seven figures and I'm going to go back to zero. And I've got two kids that are, you know, in college and that I got to support. And so that just seems straight up crazy. It took me almost 2 years to get my first paycheck from Reverse Risk. It was 10 grand a month. I was never more proud. And I was making less money than when I was 25 years old. And now I'm almost, you know, what was I at that time? 2008. So I was almost going on 50, 49 years old.
Wow.
So,
oh, wow.
But 8 years later, you know, grew it over the next, took from 2008 to 2010 to build the product. And the next 6 years, put a boatload of people on Reverse Risk who are still on it to this day.
Well, I'm one of them. I was on it this morning for about an hour.
Pretty good, right?
Amazing program.
Thank you. And I sold it to Reynolds & Reynolds in February 2016. Part of that deal required me to stay on with Reynolds. So I did for 4 years. Never thought that would be my life, you know, working inside of Reynolds & Reynolds. But they treated me very well. And the people there were kind, considerate, professional, despite the greater reputation they kind of
I learned
that they had in the industry was crazy. It was internally, they were great. So nice people.
That's good. There's always been good people with that. They just have some tough policies.
Yeah. It was great. Yeah. So, you know, I left in, let me see, 2010 is when I started selling Reverse Risk. That very same year in December is when I met my wife, Hania. Absolutely the best thing. And she's remarkable. And that was December of that same year. So I ended that year, guys, with eight clients. Eight. We came out in mid-2010. It took me 4 months to get eight clients. You know, 2011, Fletcher Jones signed up. That was huge. And we started to explode a bit there. 2012, get introduced. Steve Greenfield, of all people. Cox was wanting to buy us, and I didn't think it was a good fit, didn't want to sell at that time. So he said, well, you know, it's been great getting to know each other. He says, by the way, he says, you know who would like this product? Paul Folletti at NCM. Do you know Paul?
That's accepted, right?
Yeah. So I said, do you know Paul? He says, I said, no, I don't know Paul. So he introduces me to Paul. Paul's super interested. He's in KC. I'm in San Francisco. He says, well, why don't we meet in the middle at the Salt Lake City Delta Lounge? So we both flew in, met at the Delta Lounge. I showed him Reverse Risk. He just loved it. He said, could you fly out to Kansas City? We're having our board meeting next week. I said, sure. So I showed it to them, the moderators, consultants, institute people. They loved it. Next thing you know, they become, you know, investors. They invested a little money in Reverse Risk. But what was more important is they wanted to white label it and have the rights to distribute it to NCM clients. So that's how the Accessa version came to be. When we sold to Reynolds, I insisted to Bob Brockman, I'm not selling unless there's an agreement that you're keeping NCM. NCM can keep the distribution rights. And to his credit, he did. So that's why that happened. So I was, you know, very fortunate. I've been very fortunate, Brad, even though I had a really hard beginning of my life. You know, I have an incredible mom. And as I was an adult, you know, I found a couple mentors in the Navy, even though I didn't want to be in the Navy my whole life, it shifted the trajectory. And then, you know, I met some good people in the beginning of the car business. I was fortunate enough to only work for three dealers in 24, 25 years. Important lesson to everybody. When you get interviewed, when there's an interview, make sure you're not the only one being interviewed. Make sure that the person you want to go work for, you're also interviewing them. To make sure it's a good fit. So anyways.
But at this point, David, what I really see is you've taken a lot of risk in going from one to the other that most people will not take. So that's a big differentiation from you and others. That's a big deal.
Yeah, I think I appreciate you saying that. And I don't know why, I can't explain totally why everything happens the way it does, but we are all byproducts of our environment. We're byproducts of who we hang out with. We're byproducts. As Jim Rohn said, you're a reflection of the average of the five people you hang out with the most. I really believe that. But maybe it's because of my childhood, the way that it did, that I figured, what the heck? I'm going to go 21 black. I'm going to take a risk. I'm going to take a risk. I'm going to take a risk. And why not presume you're going to be successful? And I was just sharing this actually yesterday with somebody. Isn't it interesting that when our parents or whole lives, they try to protect us, right? Protect us from getting hurt, protect us from getting sad, protect us from having our hearts broken, protect us from making a mistake by going into the wrong business or becoming an entrepreneur or going into the car business. It occurred to me, not until I was an adult, that how come we don't ever presume that our kids are going to be successful? Why are we presuming they're going to fail? You know, and maybe through all of that, you know, maybe partially because of my mom saying, hey, don't let anybody define you. Maybe, just maybe, you know, it made me say, I think I will be successful. And if I'm not going to be, I'm okay with that. I'm fine with that. And so it really helped me throughout my life. And, you know, I'm sitting here now hurtling towards the age of 65 in November. And, you know, now I used to, way back in the day, there was a time when I would, you know, kids would ask me to buy beer for them when I was 21, 22. I imagine in a couple of years, the way the inflation's going, kids are now going to ask me to buy discount movie tickets for them instead with my senior citizen discount or groceries.
It's coming, man. It's coming to all of us, brother. We can't stop it.
But I will tell you, I don't know. I really believe that we all are really, truly uncommon. I think that we really just need to get in touch with what we were passionate about as kids, what lit us up, because that never went away. That pilot light just maybe went out, but it didn't go away. It's critically important that we learn to say no to things that really don't matter. It's so important. I learned not to compare yourself. I just was teaching my 9-year-old this 2 days ago with my wife. There's so many things I've learned thanks to some really cool people, kind people that were willing to share things with me. And here is a whole nother lesson I learned, Brad, is you could figure out who you're around, because people that are truly the kind of people that are going to impress you or impact you are willing to share every single secret of their success. And they're willing to back you. They're willing to support you. They will encourage you even when things get rough. They will be honest with you when you had something to do with things getting rough.
Well, you know, something you're really good at in a crowd is asking a lot of questions and listening. And you're very good at that. Notice that about you over the last 6 years I've known you. And that's smart on you. Smart on you.
Thank you. You know what? Know what that is I have a number of diseases and none of them are fatal at this point, terminal. But one of them is just this curiosity. I've got the curiosity, honestly. You remember when your kids were little and they asked why? I'm that person. I today still say why. I have to know the answer. It just kills me. So when I geek out on data, you know, when I spend time in stores, it is the byproduct of my curiosity and geeking out on their data and their market and their industry. Why? Because it turns out that while it takes experience and acumen, emotional IQ, and all those things are really important, but there really is a science to what we do. It really is a lot of things you could unlock through understanding data at a very deep level. But it's fundamentally boring, you know, to most people, just like process is boring. But process makes a B player an A. You know, process creates genius. Process allows people to really understand what you expect. Process creates happier, healthier, a better prepared associates. So these are, you know, things that I learned. And I don't know, I just happen to have on my desk. Look what I have on my desk, Brad. Look at the books. Non-obvious, right?
Yep.
I steer away from the obvious. Here's another one on my desk.
I love it.
Now, what's this say? Do one thing every day that scares you.
Oh, right? I do it early, right?
And here's one of my geeking out books, right? This book says 10 types of innovation. There is nothing exciting in this book, but it's my curiosity. So, you know, if you're curious, you ask questions, and that's what I like to do. So, but I appreciate you being insanely kind to me. You didn't grill me. You didn't ask me any horribly tough questions. Before we wrap up, is there any question that you'd have?
Yes. What are you doing today? Tell me what you're up to today, these days.
Really interesting question. So This is my curiosity at work, right? This is a perfect way to lead us off. I'm having lunch with some of my associates last week at a Thai restaurant, great place in Portland. We're sitting down, there's five or six of us, and the table next to us, as we're engaging, as I'm talking back with my guys, I keep hearing words about wine and food. Now, I'm an investor, a private investor in a number of companies. One of them is a pretty good sized wine company, McBride Sisters Collection, we do hundreds of thousands of cases a year, right? Andrea and Robin McBride are just rock stars. If you haven't heard of that brand, check them out. And then I'm also an investor partner with Michael Mina. And we've got, you know, about 25 or 30 4-star and 5-star restaurants across the country, plus Dubai. So I love food and wine. It's not my business, but I've loved it my whole life. And so I keep hearing these. Well, after we get done with lunch, my guys go upstairs. I'm finishing an email here. And when I get the email done, I turn to the right and I say, hey, are you guys in the wine business? And then he said, well, kind of. Well, it turns out the guy on this side of the table works for a company that's been doing distribution for 30 years. And these two guys on this side are putting in a food hall wine lounge in the bottom of the brand new Ritz-Carlton in Portland. So we exchange information that night. Here's how the world works, people. Here's the difference between what people think networking is and what networking really is. Okay, when you go to an event and you meet people and hand business cards, that's not networking. That is introductions, right? That's just meeting somebody. Networking is when you can start to have an impact on somebody, right? Facilitate introductions, things of that nature. So anyways, one of the guys named Steven, he hits me with an email that very night, Brad. Here's what he says. He says, hey, great meeting you today. He says, I really enjoyed it. Hope we could get together soon. I noticed you're in the car business. My family in China has a decent sized stake in a Chinese EV manufacturer. And my family also owns the largest BYD dealership in China. And I don't know if you'd be interested in, you know, learning more, but I'd love to get together with you. Okay.
Good knowing.
So I went to lunch with him last week. He took me through his space. Could be an amazing space. If you're ever out in Portland, anybody, go to the Ritz-Carlton. This guy's space is incredible. But he asked me at the end of that day, we have lunch, and he says, would you have any interest in doing some consulting work for the EV company? And I said, well, if your family's involved and you're involved, I said, I would love to go over to China and see your BYD dealership. That'd be awesome. He says, come over anytime. I'll host you. Great. So long story boring, we're getting together today and we're going to talk a little bit more about their EV business. Pretty cool, right? And we'll see where that leads. I have a number of clients that have a true interest in becoming BYD dealers. And if they want to know, how do I do this? Because BYD isn't begging for dealers. They're going out and hand-picking the dealers they want, right? And they're talking already to some of the top, whatever, 50 or 100 dealers in the country. So a number of my clients are interested. How weird is it this works?
That's great.
Well, after I meet this gentleman, I said, well, after I have lunch with this gentleman again today, I'll learn a little bit more. But I told him I've got clients that are interested in becoming BYD dealers, and I have somebody that I worked with in the past who's a consultant in the EV space. He says, just talk to me. He says, I have a direct connection to the CEO. Okay. So that's what I'm doing today. I just spent time, you know, with another dealer group, great dealer group, Sierra Auto Group in LA, that I do work for this morning. I also spent time with Open Road Capital, which is a great company that helps fund people that want to buy dealers. Then I'll have lunch with Steven. And then after that, I've got a couple more meetings. And in between then, I've got to squeeze a quick appointment to take my two little guys to get their passports renewed because we're planning on heading back to Europe this summer. So that's my day. I started at 5 a.m. this morning, started at 5. First meeting was at 7. And a typical day for me, you know, I'll go anywhere meeting starting from 6 or 7 and then until I typically like to wrap up around 5:30, go home, have dinner like we're in the 50s. We eat dinner every day, no TV, sit around, talk, get to know each other. And then once the kids and my wife go to bed, I get ready for the next day and off I go again.
So retirement is never in the future of David Speed.
I think, you know, it's interesting. There's a lot of data out there. My wife, as I think you know, is a critical care physician. There's a lot of data out there. You know, when somebody's been married to somebody for a long time, you know, 50, 60 years, and one of them passes, the other one generally passes within a year. Oftentimes when people retire, when they have nothing to do, they rust, they wear out. I don't want to rust. So I don't see myself traveling 250,000 miles a year for the rest of my life. In fact, this year I'm going to cut back to probably 125, but I'm being way more selective with, you know, who I work with and who I work for. But I don't see myself, Brad, not exercising my brain, especially if I love what I'm doing, which I do. You know, I mean, don't you see it the same way, don't you?
I've really enjoyed this, David. I'm so glad we kind of reversed roles here. Learning about you, knowing about you, your success is unbelievable. And I continue
you're beyond kind. And I appreciate you so much. And what you've done at your organization, everywhere you've been, has been incredibly impressive. What you've done in downtown LA on that tiny little 1 acre is mind blowing.
So well, thank you for that.
Anybody out there that doesn't know Brad, reach out. You could find how to connect with Brad, by the way, on the show notes for this episode. And I don't quite know how I'm going to deal with this on my website. Do I put a picture with myself next to myself? I don't. What do I do there with Brad in the middle? I don't know.
I love it.
But I appreciate you so much. And I know you're not going to be there at Business Bourbons and Cigars, which is always a spectacular event.
Yes,
but I do look forward to coming down to LA maybe sometime in April and having an opportunity to hang out with you and your team.
Yeah, let's make it happen for sure, buddy.
And appreciate congratulations, it. By the way, man, on the wedding, you know, the recent marriage.
Thank you.
And also you sharing that you're now expecting not one, but two grandbabies. So that'll make a total of how many?
Five.
Yeah, how blessed are you?
The best thing in the world.
Give my very best to everybody in your wonderful family.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All the best. Thank you, brother. Take care.
Thanks, David. Appreciate you.
You've been listening to The David Spezak Show. If you haven't yet, please click the subscribe button and leave a rating wherever you're listening right now. I look forward to having you back in the room where it happens.